to the inquisitorial representative, the Valdor interviews. "My lord, I recently dispatched the 32nd Mordian Iron Guard on a fact-finding expedition into the bowels of Holy Terror itself, in search of several possible vaults, potentially containing pre-imperial or Great Crusade-era records, which, through various means, I had been alerted to. I selected the Mordians because they were near to hand, in all honesty, and having visited their bleak little world in the past, I am aware of their superb skills in underhive environments. Also, they have remarkably good eyesight, due to Mordia being a night world which has been bred into them over the generations, which I thought might come in handy. Maybe it did. For whatever reason, the mission was a great success. The survivor returned several months after deployment and handed over several transcripts and collections of records which have been quite illuminating. To have such information, if legitimate, from the horse's mouth, so to speak, is mind-boggling. The first record goes into some extensive detail regarding the Thunder Warriors of legend, as well as the nature of the War of Unification, and the many threats that our Imperium faced at its inception. The second record is even more startling. It contains the fate of the Primarch Project. Obviously, this information cannot be distributed to the general populace, but I am at a loss as to what to do with it. To hear the words of one of the fathers of our Imperium is terrifying and intriguing. I have sent this to you directly, and be aware that all of us with knowledge of them have been granted the Emperor's peace. Record 1. Transcript begins.
Morlan Sen. That is not a name I recall with any fondness. Few remember it now at all, outside the Order.
How many years ago?
126. More than a mortal lifetime.
Not something that affects you, I suppose.
Not in the same way. It was a confederacy of states. They had banded together during the worst years of anarchy. The climate is severe in those latitudes. That was also a factor. In those days, the weather satellites were all destroyed, and the winters had become punishing. Some form of association would have been required to avoid substantive depopulation, just as in other areas of the globe, where the structures of civilization had degraded beyond recall. I remember the rock. It was black, like oil. The skies were heavy, and there were storms every day of the campaign, as if the heavens themselves were set against us. Equipment froze before we could use it. At every dawn, we would have to light fires under the engines of the transports before we could use them. And the wind. It was like a scream, never ceasing.
Tell me of the campaign orders, the preliminaries.
This was in the early years of active expansion. The Emperor's plan had been in progress for decades by then, but we had not shown our hand openly in many places. Our stated territorial holdings were modest, enough to guarantee access to the materials we needed, and to impose a cordon around the sites where our researches needed to be protected. Only when those were fully secured and our forces mustered in number could we advance without the stealth we had previously employed. Morlan Sen was not the first kingdom we conquered. It was too far from our established center of control. However, I believe he had marked it out for particular attention from the start. In a world of abominations, it nevertheless stood out. We had heard all the stories and studied the spies' reports, and he knew the place. He had been there before.
For the transcript, by he, you mean...
The Emperor, of course. He was fully aware of the practices conducted there and wished to eradicate them as soon as he had the power to. That was always the principal objective, you understand, even in those early years. We are not simply fighting for territory. We are fighting to remove the taint of sorcery from terror. I see you smile. Again, this is now not widely understood. A consequence of our success, I suppose. Say sorcery now, and you will provoke a laugh of disbelief. But during the anarchy, all manner of beliefs were held, which led many into moral corruption. The human soul, if left unattended, tends to moral corruption, and that opens doors. This world had been left unattended for a very long time. Many doors had been left open. Morland Sen was a kingdom of witches at the roof of the world, a realm closer to a nightmare would be hard to imagine. It combined all that was worst about the darkened age. There was no law, no regulation of the powerful, no true science, a willful indulgence of excess and ignorance. They had retained scraps of knowledge and put them to foul uses, giving them a veneer of military might, but it was fragile and was already beginning to come apart even as we marched on it. I considered it like a great ash tree of the region's long-forgotten myths, its trunk iron strong, but its heart eaten away by rot. He knew it could be destroyed, even when other advisors counseled caution. So the order was given, and so, indeed, it transpired. You asked for details. The campaign was one of the first in which we deployed significant numbers of the Legionis Catagis, alongside our regular troops. It was not their first engagement, but I believe it was the first in which an entire Legio was deployed. In this case, he chose the fourth, given the cognomen, at the time, Iron Lords. They were specialists in siegecraft, through both training and genecraft. Other Legionis, at that stage, had not reached full battle readiness, but they were one of the first, and had impressed him with their preparedness. Alongside the Catagis, we were able to muster 22 regiments of standard troops. By then, the Imperial Army was being organized into divisions by climactic zone, for the vagaries of the planet's weather were a major impediment to true global conquest, and we were able to call on cold weather specialists. The majority of the forces we took with us were equipped with suitable armor and had access to modified weaponry. This was a necessity rather than a luxury. Conditions were such that a human exposed to the elements without technological aid or other prescribed protective methods died within hours. As I said, it was a hellish place. I often wondered what had enabled life to cling on there at all. We found our answer when we got there. And then there was the Legio Custodes. 30 warriors came with me, all assigned to protective duties. It was not anticipated that we would play the leading part in the fighting. Morland Sen was, in many ways, a trial for the Catagis. We wished to see if they could be as lethal en masse as they had already been in their smaller formations.
You do not give them their familiar name.
I can, if you wish me to. Thunder Warrior is merely the low Gothic form.
Tell me of their Primarch.
Their commander? I'm not sure why you ask. Initially, the fighting divisions had been envisaged as somewhat smaller than they eventually became, and thus the ranks were organized on orthodox regimental lines. The Primarch was equivalent to the Captain General rank in broad terms, responsible for discipline and conduct of the entire Legio. He was not physically different to any of his troops, but had distinguished himself in combat and leadership, and was appointed directly by the Emperor. His equipment was given particular attention, but you must understand that we were innovating all the time. Technologies were being rediscovered or recreated every year. Some troops were marching to war in fine armor. Others were in generation-old fatigues. The Primarchs and their command group naturally were given the best of what we had. There were 20 of them in conception, one for each Plan Legio, although by that stage, not all had been given the title. This Primarch of the fourth was Ushatan. He was a superlative warrior and a fine general. In most respects, I admired him very much.
Tell me of the fighting.
You know the histories. They are accurate. Records of all the major engagements have been deposited within the tower, and they are available to you. What more can I say?
How was it to be there, as a witness?
I see. I take no pleasure, nor do I experience dismay in combat. That was not the case with either our enemy or Ushatan's warriors. They were both ferocious. Our enemy was called the Priest King. It was a name he had given himself, one which was perfectly appropriate. His followers were fanatical, deranged by both combat narcotics and by delusions he fed them. Somehow, even in that frigid waste, they had laid hands on technology from a forgotten age, and had learned, or been shown, how to use it. The results were despicable. We were fighting men stitched together into mockeries of human form. Some were encased in machines, and goaded into war with pain amplifiers. Most of those we encountered, to one degree or another, had been shaped into new forms, swapping their dignity for a feral kind of strength. The perimeter cities were conquered relatively quickly, for the taint of the Priest King was lighter there, and the heartlands of the Confederacy had always been inland, but in high peaks where the skies flew with shards of wind-blown ice. We secured a beachhead on the southern western lowlands, and flew in heavy landers to anchor our supply routes north. We were operating far from home, but had our familiar advantages. Technology, confidence, energy. After only a month, we were planning our incursions further in. As I have said, the terrain was always against us. The unenhanced warriors suffered high rates of attrition, something that was hard to minimize. As we advanced north, many of them lost their minds. There were voices in the wind, and the cold was crushing. Those who died would be encountered again, ghosts in the gales, and it preyed on the nerves of our line troops. We would not have been able to continue had we only been able to draw on their services. This was not unforeseen, and underscored the necessity of the gene-crafted detachments. I tell you this truly, for some are already beginning to doubt it. Terra could not have been conquered without them. We had already fallen too far and let too many monsters loose. They were weapons that allowed us to advance into that ice-locked night. So, it was a hard contest. Even if, with the Emperor with us, the outcome was never truly in doubt. Every citadel was contested. Every offensive was met by a counter-offensive. They knew the conditions. They knew the pattern of the landscape. They had nowhere to withdraw to. More than 7,000 of our gene-crafted shock troops died in the final assault. If you had seen how the Thunder Warriors fought, how committed they were, and how unrestrained in slaughter, you would appreciate the nature of what we faced there. Some of the weaknesses we displayed in the Nordic have now been addressed. All the armor we use now is of ceramic and metallurgical alloys rather than the steel plate and hardened leather some of us wore back then. Our blades are equipped with energy fields, and the bolt gun has replaced the old carbines and las rifles. At Morlan Sen, in those days, the levels of technology were roughly comparable. What set us apart was our belief. The Priest King had been hollowed out. His rantings were transparent, even to those whom he had led into damnation. But we were led by him. That, in the end, was always the difference, wherever we fought.
But what was it like?
Your pardon?
What did it feel like to be there?
I am uncertain how to answer. I will do my best. There was a sickness. We could all taste it. I have encountered similar sensations since, when fighting other enemies of allied origin. But then it was new to me. It generated little but disgust in me and my brothers. For the Thunder Warriors under Ushatan, it seemed to have a different effect. They thrived on it, at least for a time. They had, I surmised, the capacity to magnify whatever foulness they faced. That ferocity was useful, but it had its weaknesses. The walls around the final stronghold had been constructed in the mountains. The fortifications were set high and were well defended. And they had prepared for us over many years. I remember looking at it on the final night before the order was given to destroy it. It was lit from behind by a greenish light, and its black walls gleamed. There was an art to its construction, but a twisted one. Every angle of its immense defenses seemed to embody pain, in one form or another. Set alongside the physical challenges, there was also the presence of other obstacles. Ghosts dogged us.
You mean figuratively, I presume?
No. I use what seems to me the proper term. It might have been wiser to slow the pace of the assault, to limit our eventual casualties, but by then the Cat Aegis were caught in a cycle of aggression. Death meant nothing to them, For a time, it seemed that orders meant nothing to them either. They were elemental in their violence. So I remember that city, lost in the dark and the ice at the edge of the world. The snow was piled up around it in drifts 10 meters deep. Its high battlements were lined with flame weapons. When we assaulted and brought up our own heavy guns, we created a flood of meltwater. We were advancing through torrents of it, a grey sea of filth that found its way inside our armor seals. The tanks stalled, and the electrical relays burst. We were reduced to infantry engagements faster than anticipated, and still the walls were intact. Ushitan made the first breakthrough. There was more slaughter than I would have countenanced once he was inside. Not all the Priest King's people were corrupted. Some were slaves, and others might still have been salvaged for productive employment within the Imperium. In that, though, the Thunder Warriors demonstrated their greatest weakness. They were like the munitions we used back then, powerful but unstable. Once loosed, they were hard to control. They broke through the inner chambers like a tide, slaughtering all they encountered. They demonstrated then the sheer power of the gene-crafted soldier. If we had wished for an indication of their prowess, we could not have had a clearer one. And yet, so many had died on both sides. It felt wanton. I spoke to Ushitan after the citadel had finally been taken, its roofs broken and its walls pounded into rubble. It was by then far into the following night. An entire diurnal cycle had passed in fighting, and we had barely looked up to notice it. I remember how his armor was, covered in already freezing blood. His helm was gone, and his arm was broken. A fresh storm had descended, and the battlefields were buffeted with new snow, covering up the tracks of grey slush we had exposed. He was laughing when we met. He had a vivid light in his eyes. I thought he looked like the ghost of all murders.
What did he say?
He told me that he understood, for the first time, the reason he had been made. He told me that I would never feel the same way, and that he pitied me for that.
Did you respond?
I was troubled, as I recall, not by the comment nor the implied insult, but by the sentiment expressed. I felt as if we had unleashed something that would be hard to keep within bounds.
Where did this feeling lead you? Where did this feeling lead you, Captain General?
Transcript ends. Record 2. Transcript begins.
Thank you. When did the incident take place?
26 years ago.
In the palace?
That is classified.
Ah.
I have perfect recall.
You know that?
Nothing since the day I awoke following my creation into this newer, higher state is hidden from me. Names, faces, actions, they are all vivid, as real as when they first entered my life. But even if that were not so, I would remember that day with absolute clarity. It is burned on my mind like a brand. I see the events of it in my sleep. Even when waking, the sensation is never far away.
What sensation?
Of falling. Falling through a hole in the universe, unable to catch at the edges. Now I see you smiling again. It is the truth. I have never considered myself an artful user of language.
Perhaps then, from the beginning.
I was with the Sigilite, the Lord Malkador. We were discussing the very thing you raised with me. You will recall my concerns about the Cat-Aegis during the Morlan Sen campaign. Those concerns had not gone away during the following century of their many deployments. We had conquered much of the globe by then, with the Thunder Warriors bearing the brunt of the fighting. So do not think we were unmindful of their sacrifice. By then it was widely believed that what could have been perfected had been perfected. A Thunder Warrior was a truly fearsome proposition. They were armed and armored nearly as well as the Legio Custodes. Their numbers had grown rapidly following improvements in the gene cultivation methods used here and at the other sites. But it was never enough. They remained unstable, from Primarch to Neophyte. They would break down suddenly or lose their minds, or simply stop responding to orders. This was not a simple matter of dry practicality for us. It was a foul thing to witness. A warrior's blood might suddenly rebel against the arteries that carried it, or the organs might start to devour themselves, or the muscle might explode with breakneck growth. For a proud and fearless creation, that was a poor way to die. Be aware also that they were quite conscious of this likely outcome. It did predictable things to their psychology. Knowing that they were limited by time and circumstance, their attitude to risk became even more cavalier. They were hard to govern from the start, but as the Imperium began to reach its secure zenith, they risked becoming an empire within an empire, and one with the old, reckless dangers of the past writ large. That was the subject I had come to speak with Malkador about. We had met many times in the past, on some occasions in the presence of the Emperor himself, to debate the same issue. This time, however, our council was not with him, but with the foremost practitioner of gene arts in the entire Imperium. You will know the name, of course. I am speaking of Astarte.
Emir Astarte?
Quite. The three of us had gathered to consider something that had been developing under his auspices for a number of years, a way to bring order to the situation. We had won our empire through the application of gene science. We all believed that its weaknesses could also be purged through the application of gene science. Every victory achieved by our armies was matched by a victory in the underground laboratories established by the Emperor. It is important to understand how essential this program was, and how difficult. We were working with fragments and splinters of ancient knowledge, most of it lost centuries ago, and only preserved at all thanks to his tireless efforts. The complexity of it was prodigious. It required a vast expenditure of resources. Each time we recovered priceless technology during an engagement, it was brought back and pressed into service towards the ultimate goal, a solution to the problem of genetic instability. On occasion, I am asked why it had taken so long to bring this one world to heal. I am tempted to reply that no other conqueror has had to forge his weapons while at the same time waging his war. Victory beget victory in the end, but it was never easy. Our meeting that day was required due to certain disagreements over the correct course of action at that stage. The Sigillite had been involved closely with the Emperor's labors, and advocated a radical course, or so it seemed to me at any rate. The Lord Malkador had, and has, great faith in genecraft. Our only failing, he argued then, was that we had not gone as far as we might have done. I felt differently. I had not learned to have the same unwavering faith in the processes we used. Mass production of gene-crafted warriors is fraught with pitfalls. We, in the Order, are biologically altered, of course, but with us the procedure is singular and painstaking. It would never suffice to supply an entire army this way, or else the productive capacity of the Imperium would be unable to generate anything else. I was, nevertheless, of the view that the custodians were, at that point, capable of overseeing the Imperium's next phase of growth, bolstered by the far larger armies of unenhanced troops we then possessed. That was the central point of our disagreement.
And Astarte?
Astarte is an official. She is a genius, of course, but her craft is science, not policy. She regarded herself as a servant of the Emperor. To be more precise, I think she regarded herself as a manifestation of the Emperor's intentions. I should remark on this. There are those who claim, foolishly, that the Imperium is the result of one man's efforts. An extraordinary man, to be sure, but a singular entity nonetheless. This is a profoundly dangerous assumption. We saw for ourselves on many occasions, once the cult of the individual reaches a certain point, it becomes impossible to restrain the attributions of godhood. This was always a danger, given the many demagogues in the Terran past. And so the Emperor was mindful to distribute duties amongst those who were skillful enough to comprehend his vision. His greatest gift, I think, is to be alive to the possibility of those who serve him. He takes keen delight in the intelligent human mind and will protect those in whom he sees potential. So it is that the Imperium is the product of many souls, all working towards one vision. Astartes is one of these. Save for the Emperor himself, no one alive on this world understands the ways of gene manipulation more than her. We have never been close in council, due to our differing functions, but I yield to no one in my admiration of her.
What was the result of the conference?
There was no result. It was curtailed before any conclusion could be determined.
You hesitate. Do you wish to continue?
This is the moment that is seared in my mind. I am considering how best to tell it. Consider the situation. We were deep in the foundations of what is now becoming the Inner Palace. This had ever been the heart of our operations, and much of it remains tightly restricted. It is the Sigilite's domain, in all but name. His ancient order delved that place, and populated it with their artifacts. Other chambers were carved out in close proximity to the older caverns. In large part, this was to provide access to machinery the Sigilite had been instrumental in preserving. Otherwise, I believe symbolism played a more important role. We were, as we saw it, reviving humanity. So we started, as we had to, close to its oldest remnants. There were other places, some of them only the Emperor knew of, some we were all familiar with, some were close at hand, others very far away, all of them chosen according to the dimensions of the greater project. There was another location, one that I still cannot reveal to you with any precision, only that it was far from here, so far that when the alarms began, we were a long way from where we needed to be. I've often speculated on whether things would have been different had I been closer. I believe Malkador feels the same way, and it is a source of some guilt for both of us that we were not there. However, the Emperor was at the very heart of it, and if he was unable to intervene successfully, then I must believe that no one could have had the power to prevent what happened. We acted as swiftly as we could. We were like a storm breaking. I summoned all that I could of the Legio, and we travelled to the Forbidden Center. All thoughts of secrecy were gone. In that instant, we tore the skies apart to reach our destination. Malkador came with us, as did Astarte. I can still remember my desperation to be faster. I believe I came as close as I will ever come to knowing fear in those moments. Not for myself, but for something far greater. By the time we arrived, the entire facility was in a state of confusion. The walls were breaking. The roofs were coming down. Buttresses that had taken years to fashion were twisting out of shape under sudden loads. There were bodies everywhere. Technicians, artificers, mech workers. Even custodians had been slain, though by means that I could not understand, for their armor was still intact. We were soon deep underground, caked in grey dust and fighting against the darkness and the smoke. The halls were of considerable size. Tens of thousands laboured in that facility, all under a cloak of the most stringent secrecy, and the survivors were panicking, trapped in the corridors like herd animals in a slaughterhouse. The Emperor was not visible to me, but I understood why. The entire structure of that place had been critically damaged, and he was holding it together. Though I could not determine his precise location. Without him, the chambers would have by then have been nothing more than choked rubble. It was a strange sensation, moving through a physical volume of space, entirely suffused by the Emperor's presence. It was also a reminder to me of his power. Even I need reminders of that from time to time. So, the more I saw, the more I felt dread reaching for me. You remember what I said about the sickness at Morlin Sen? The same sensation was there, only many times more concentrated. I saw seasoned soldiers vomiting blood or dashing their heads against the rock. Every lumen was flickering, casting the blood stains in patterns of failing light. It was hard to breathe, even with our physiology and armor protection. The deeper we went, the more horror we witnessed. It was far worse than Morlin Sen. For this was in a place we had carved out ourselves. It was deemed safe, as secure as any mortal power could make. That was another lesson for us. There are no safe places.
Where was this? What had happened to it?
I cannot tell you everything. You will understand more in due course. We hastened to recover what could be recovered. I directed those of my order to impose their control on the outer precincts, and this was slowly achieved. They were compelled to euthanize many whose minds had been turned by what they had seen. Those who might yet survive were taken to medical units. Emergency engineering teams were shuttled in to shore up the outer gates, lest we end up buried alive within, as we labored. Every one of them was accompanied by a custodian, for there was still madness singing in the air, and I could only trust those of my own kind to remain resistant to it. I began to understand the true nature of what we were set against then. The Priest King was just a shard cut from this dark crystal, a mere sliver of a greater abomination. I could breathe it in there. I could taste its essence, like wormwood on my tongue. On some days, even now, I can still taste it. The greatest of the many chambers was, by then, lost to us. Its interior was aflame, its great vials broken. I looked inside, just for a split second, and saw 20 vessels robbed of their contents, with lightning still snapping from vein to vein. There was nothing to be done there, and I almost turned away from the deeper vaults too. It was Astarte who pressed on, and I followed her. There was more to salvage, she said, and I instantly saw that she was correct. Further down, in long galleries cut from the living rock, were the secondary repositories. Imagine it, walls over 50 meters high, running back beyond sight into the heart of the darkness, all lined with vials in precisely categorized sections. The vaults were temperature controlled, though I could already feel the ambient climate rising rapidly. Some of the caddies looked badly damaged, with glass broken or electro seals malfunctioning. If they had been left there much longer, they would all have burned. Astarte was invaluable in those moments. She knew which caches to retrieve and which would have to be left. I pressed every available member of my order into service, for all the technicians on that level were dead or missing. One by one, we extracted the caches and took them to places of safety. We kept records of all that we took and made sure that none of those retrieved went missing. The two of us, Astarte and I, spent that desperate time working together. We did not speak much, for the need for haste was pressing, but I do remember her expression throughout, one of almost infinite horror. I am not always adept at deciphering human emotional signals, but I needed no assistance at that point. We both knew that her life's work, the work, you might say, of the entire Imperium, had come close to being wiped out. In the end, though, the worst did not transpire. The Emperor's project was not entirely lost. All that we had learned over those long centuries of recovery did not disappear, though the body of it was gravely damaged. I carried vials from the flames myself, feeling the pulse of life within them through my gauntlets. When all was done, we were forced to withdraw. Many of the deeper caches were abandoned to the flames. The entire structure began to subside at last, and our remaining forces were ordered to the surface. I was the last to depart, along with Malkador. I recall running down the final corridor, the dust plumes gathering at our heels, and reflecting that, for an old man, he could move fast when he wanted to. And that was the end of it. A great work, destroyed, with only the smallest fragments retained.
Why are you telling me this?
You asked me about it.
I asked about leadership for the Thunder Legion.
I had thought my intention was obvious. We were laboring to eliminate genetic instability. Had it succeeded, we would have created subjects with far greater control over their powers. They would have been the ones to whom the tasks of leadership could be delegated. There will be greater battlefields ahead, once this world is fully secured. Thousands of them.
But it failed.
It did.
And the vials you retrieved were?
It failed, High Lord. There were no new generals for the Imperial armies.
Then, and I come to a difficult area, I have one more question.
I know.
There have been no reports of activity from the Thunder Legion for months. Silence, even in the High Council, where we used to be sent bulletins. Is their absence somehow related to this episode? Or has some security protocol changed that keeps their movement secret?
I have answered your questions.
You have, in greater detail than I could have hoped for, but not so far, on the central matter. What happened on Mount Ararat, Captain General?
You are out of time.
I went there. I saw the remains. What happened to the Thunder Warriors? Transcript ends. My lord, obviously these are amazing records to come into our possession. And again, I beg, if they are legitimate, please do advise me what to do with them, as I am not entirely confident that I should be holding on to them at the moment. As ever, I remain your most loyal servant and await your response eagerly. Kind regards, Inquisitor A.B. Prince.